the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Here's your host, Jim Poplava.
Well, it is that time of the year. Junior is graduating from high school, and if you are like many parents, you're probably thinking, especially if you have more than one child, you're thinking, how am I going to pay for all of that college? Well, that's going to be the subject of today's session. Joining me on the program is Mark Kantrowitz. He's the publisher of SavingForCollege.com. Mark, I want to talk about a couple things that you've written articles on your site. And our listeners can find that by going to savingforcollege.com. But let's begin with, is there a cutoff that these colleges use for becoming eligible for financial aid? In other words, I know with income taxes, Social Security, at certain income levels, benefits are phased out or cost you more. What about when you're looking at financial aid for college?
Financial aid formulas are complicated, so there isn't a simple answer. And there's this concept called an expected family contribution, which is indirectly based on income, but there are cutoffs based on that. But in general, unless the parents earn $350,000 a year and they're a top 1%er, they have only one child, and that child will enroll at an in-state public college, they should file the free application for federal student aid. Because the formulas, and if you go from one child in college to two children in college, that's like dividing the parent income almost in half. There are some thresholds that they subtract allowances for basic living expenses. It's not a linear process. But generally speaking, parents have a tendency to underestimate their eligibility for need-based aid and overestimate their eligibility for merit-based aid. I often have parents say, well, my child's a valedictorian. So were 80,000 other students last year. My child has perfect SAT scores. There were thousands of kids who had perfect SAT scores. So academic performance is no longer sufficiently distinguishing that if you have great grades and great test scores, you're guaranteed of getting merit scholarships. Colleges these days, especially the most selective colleges, are looking for students who stand out in other ways besides just academics. So that they have a long history with a particular club or sport or musical instrument. And depth matters more than breadth.
So here we are. We're in June. A lot of colleges will start at the end of August. Mark, is it too late to start this application process? That's number one. And if it is there an ideal time that you should be doing this?
Well, if you're applying for financial aid for the fall, I'm applying in August is a little bit late in the game. It tends to be the slow period is during the summer months. But who knows, maybe the college needs additional students and they want to make sure that you're going to actually show up in the fall. And there's a concept called summer melt where students don't show up in the fall who have accepted the offer of admission. But you can always get a head start on next year's financial aid. I started applying for scholarships, and there are scholarships you can only win when you're already in college that are available just for sophomore, juniors, and seniors, not college freshmen. So I would definitely encourage you to look for all the opportunities. Plus, if you have unusual or special financial circumstances that maybe weren't considered by the financial aid application forms, or maybe something's changed, you had a job and everything was going fine, and then suddenly you got laid off. Let the college financial aid office know. They can make adjustments to accommodate changes in the financial circumstances of a family or special circumstances like you have a special needs child that you didn't mention on the financial aid application before. All of those are considerations that the college can take into account and maybe give you a little bit more financial aid based on those differences in the changes in your income from the prior year to the present, and changes in your family circumstances relative to all other families.
And Mark, is there a universal form that everybody goes through to fill out to apply for, let's say, financial aid? And if there is, how do you know how to fill it out properly and the right things to put on that form?
So there is a form called the Free Application for Federal Student Aid, or by its acronym, the FAFSA, that is used to apply for money from the federal government, the state governments, in most colleges and universities. There are slightly less than 200 colleges who will use a supplemental form called the CSS profile form to apply for their own financial aid funds. They still use the FAFSA for federal and state aid, but for their own grants, they use the profile. The profile asks more than twice as many questions as the FAFSA, so it's a much more detailed analysis of the family's financial strength. But most families will file the FAFSA. The FAFSA becomes available on October 1st prior to the next year, and it is best to file that FAFSA as soon as possible on or after October 1st, because students who file it sooner tend to get more grant aid. Now, the FAFSA is also used to determine eligibility for the federal Pell Grant, which is up to $6,195. The amount goes up each year. Grant funds, that's gift aid, money that you don't have to repay. And about 94% of the recipients of the federal Pell Grant have income under $60,000. That doesn't mean you can't receive it with higher income, but generally speaking, you might have multiple children in college at the same time, which is what the equivalent of, if you have two children in college, it's the equivalent of dividing your income almost in half. And there's other circumstances, like if you had high unreimbursed medical and dental expenses last year, that might offset your income and therefore make you eligible. So it's a complicated system.
I know you cover this area extensively. Do you have things on your site or books and things that you've written that can help guide a parent through this process? As you said, there's several forms, one at the federal level, one at the state level. Colleges may have their own particular forms. Do you have something that can help guide a parent or a student through that process?
We have articles, first of all, on how to maximize your eligibility for need-based aid, how to win more scholarships, and also how to appeal for more financial aid. So there's a lot of detailed information on those particular topics, as well as specific situations that come up quite frequently, such as a child whose parents are divorced. On the FAFSA, only one parent is responsible for completing the FAFSA, but if that parent is remarried, the step-parent is also required. The profile potentially requires information from all four parents if your child's biological parents have gone to divorce and each has remarried. But there are articles that discuss that situation, 529 plans and how they interact with financial aid, if it's owned by the parent versus it's owned by the grandparent, how to deal with those situations to try to increase your eligibility for need-based and merit-based aid.
So here we are in June. Everybody's graduated. As you mentioned earlier, Mark, maybe there might be some colleges that will accept some kind of application for the fall. But ideally, shouldn't a parent be doing this when junior is in his maybe, not his senior year, but his third year in high school?
Well, certainly. And the sooner you get started, the more money you can win from private sources and the more money you can save. I started saving for my kids' college education before they were born. That doesn't mean, though, that you shouldn't start saving whenever you start thinking about the need to save. Your child could be a high school senior, and it's still worthwhile to save because every dollar you save is a dollar less you're going to have to borrow. Plus, there are 34 states that have these state income tax deductions based on your contributions to the state's 529 plan. So if you contribute the money to that 529 plan, it's like getting a discount on tuition at whatever your marginal state income tax rate is. And all but four of them will allow you to put the money in one day and then take the money out the next day and still get the benefit of that state income tax deduction. It's kind of an intentional loophole. There are the other four states, it's your contributions net of your distributions is the basis for the state income tax deduction. So you put the money in one year and you take it out the next year. So it gives you half as much of a benefit.
I want to talk about another issue that many of our listeners may be facing, and that's a family that has maybe two or three children that they're going to try to put through college. And in many cases, Mark, you know that the parents just don't have the income to do that. So I want to talk about an article you wrote, How to Have the College Money Talk with Your Children. How do you approach this with your children? I had a case where the daughter had high SAT scores, straight A student, got accepted to an A-rated college that would have cost the parents several hundred thousand dollars, but Mark, she was going to be a teacher. Did it make a lot of sense to spend $200,000 on a private education for a starting salary that's going to be somewhere in the $40,000, $50,000 range?
Being a teacher, there's also a variety of loan forgiveness programs like public service loan forgiveness and teacher loan forgiveness, where if she borrows the money, she may be able to get substantial amounts of that debt forgiven for working as a teacher. But certainly you need to consider, what is the return on your investment? Do you really need to go to the best school in your field? Or will a much less expensive college, such as an in-state public college, give you just as good a quality education, in some cases even better quality education, for a quarter to a third the price? So it's important that you start laying the groundwork for your child to start thinking about not just which college they want to go to because they keep on hearing the name of their college, but also which is the best fit for them academically, socially, is it close to home, far from home, and is it also a financial fit? You don't want to have your child choosing the most expensive college simply because they can. You need to consider the trade-offs on how much debt they and you are going to take on versus the outcomes from that education.
And, you know, this seems to be really important when a parent has maybe three, four children. So, you know, you're talking about college education for three or four people, not just one, and which is a heavy burden. That's why I think that issue needs to be raised. I want to talk about some colleges have higher borrowing rates for parents. And you talk about student loans, by the time you pay back the interest, will almost cost you double the price of the loan.
Given the mix of interest rates and the loan fees and the repayment terms and capitalized interest during the in-school period, every dollar you borrow is going to, on average, cost about $2 by the time you repay the debt. Some cases, maybe more than double. And so you need to borrow only what you need, not what you can. Don't treat loan limits as targets. Now, if you pay back that student loan as quickly as you can, you choose the highest monthly payment you can afford, which might be a 10-year repayment plan, and you don't take a deferment or forbearance, and maybe you even pay the interest during the in-school period, then you will not have it being double. It might be 40, 50% greater than the amount you borrowed. And every time you borrow money from a loan, you are going to be paying back more than what you borrowed. But how much more depends on how quickly you repay that debt.
You know, the thing that has become a major issue in this country is the amount of outstanding student debt. A lot of students, some of them are defaulting on those loans. So, Mark, what about some of the issues of dealing with how to get through college without having debt? You know, we use something called the 2+2 program. In fact, one of our interns went through this, where they stayed at home, went to a junior college for 2 years, had a job working part-time, so they got work experience in the field that we're going into, and then after junior college, went to a local state college, finished out their degree program, still living at home, and they end up on graduation date having no debt and money in the bank, versus, what is it, the national average is somewhere between $35,000 and $38,000 of debt for every student graduating?
So not everyone can do it. And the key to graduating with very little or no debt is either going to a very inexpensive college, less than $8,000 typically, or having picked wealthy parents. More than two-thirds of bachelor degree recipients graduate with some debt, and the average debt at graduation, just the student loan debt, not the parent debt, is about $30,000. So the key here is not to completely avoid debt, but to minimize the debt. And it's very popular for people to talk about taking a detour through a community college, a two-year school, to save money on a bachelor's degree. But if your goal is to obtain a bachelor's degree, taking that detour may cause you to miss your destination, because only 20%, one-fifth of students who start off at a two-year institution compares to two-thirds of the students who start off at a four-year institution. So my advice would be start off at an in-state public college. That's going to be much cheaper than a private college, but start off at a four-year college if your goal is to obtain a bachelor's degree. But your goal might be to get an associate's degree or a certificate, in which case a two-year college may be a great choice. And if you want to become an HVAC tech or electrician, you can get a really good education at a community college. But where the community colleges come in, if your goal is to obtain a bachelor's degree, is to maybe take some classes during the summer while you're enrolled at that four-year institution to pay for those classes at a lower cost, because community colleges cost a lot less than four-year colleges. But the first thing you need to do before you do that is to see whether those classes are going to transfer for credit to your home institution, the four-year public college, and whether they're just going to count as just general credits or whether they're going to count as prerequisites for classes you otherwise would have to take. Because if you graduate with a lot more credits than you need to, and they didn't eliminate any requirements, then maybe that money was wasted.
You mentioned something that we're starting to see more and more of, and this is happening with the junior colleges. Companies are doing this, and that is you go to a junior college and you come out with not only an AA degree, but a certificate, whether you're going to be a technician, a medical tech, a nurse, or whatever it is. But more and more of these professions are getting specialized, requiring, let's say, only 2 years in a certification.
Yeah, and one thing that next time you go to the doctor's office and a physician's assistant takes your blood pressure and maybe checks your blood glucose levels or hemoglobin A1C, ask them where they went to school. And most of them will have gone to a two-year institution, and you'll be surprised at which institutions they went to. Now, a nurse practitioner, a registered nurse, that's a four-year degree in most cases, in which case you'll find out which college they went to get that bachelor's of science degree in nursing. And that'll be kind of interesting. Open your eyes to what institutions are available to get a more job-focused degree.
Yeah, I have a nephew that went to a junior college, majored in kind of medical tech, and now he's with the fire department as an EMT, and he got right in. So you're seeing a lot more of that rather than just the four-year college. And what about, Mark, doing research into the field you may want to get into or the degree you're pursuing, because there's nothing worse than for a parent or child to go heavily in debt to finance an education to find out that degree doesn't get you a job.
Or you are pursuing an education in a particular field of study, and then midway you decide you don't want to work in that field, and so you change majors. And every time you change majors or transfer from one college to another, you're adding half a year to a year of additional costs, because some of those credits will not transfer to a different degree program or a different university. I would suggest shadowing someone in the field. If you have a friend or relative who works in the area, ask some questions. Do your research. And college education is like a small mortgage, but without owning the home. And you would do an incredible amount of research when shopping around for a new home or buying a car. Well, you need to do similar amounts of research when buying an education, because if you don't really check out what it is that you want to do when you grow up, you could end up wasting a lot of money. So it's a good idea to try to crystallize what major you're interested in, maybe take some classes in that major or a survey course right off the bat so that you can be certain that that's what you want to go into, as opposed to getting very deep into it, having 2 years of classes behind your belt, and then suddenly deciding it isn't for you.
You know, education costs have been going up at 6 to 8% a year. It's amazing. It's hard to believe. I went to a junior college for 2 years, and my semester tuition was $45 for a full-time student. I mean, it's hard to believe that compared to today. Do you see anything that is going to maybe prevent college costs from escalating the way they have over the last couple of decades?
Well, unfortunately, and the mix of costs that are involved in paying for a college education are they're more expensive and they go up faster than the consumer price index, the regular inflation rate. And they tend to include facility costs, energy costs, equipment costs, faculty and staff salary and benefits. All of those are going up faster than inflation. So I don't see any end in sight. What is starting to happen, though, is we're starting to see small liberal arts colleges, you know, less than 5,000 enrollment, that are tuition dependent, so they don't have big endowments. These colleges are starting to either shut down or merge with their neighbors. Not a lot of them a year, just a handful, but that's more than half in the past. And the reason is because they're having difficulty attracting students who can afford to pay the high tuition prices, especially at these colleges that have very low student-faculty ratios. It improves the quality of education, but it increases the cost per student. So there really aren't, the colleges don't really have an option of cutting their prices. There aren't that many ways they can do that other than hiring part-time faculty who don't get benefits. And so they end up, they're going to start shutting down. And that means, yes, the average cost may be decreasing, but it's not because individual colleges are cutting their costs. It's because some of the more expensive colleges that aren't well known nationally are struggling to find students.
So if you were to boil this down, if you were to give some advice to, let's say, a parent that, well, let's take two situations, a parent that just had a child graduate this June, or one that is maybe in their junior year in high school, is there like a 1-2-3 step process that you would advise a parent to take?
Well, first thing is benchmark your college savings progress. So, and how much have you saved total for your child's college education? How much will you have when they start, when they're ready to enroll in college? And add to that the financial aid that you're going to get and other resources like the student loans, a reasonable amount of debt. Your total debt at graduation should be less than your annual starting salary. Then you can afford to repay it in 10 years or less. That's your total resources that are available. Compare that with the four-year net price of the college. So maybe you take the first year and you multiply it by 4 to 5 or something like that to get into the right ballpark. That will give you a sense as to whether that college is affordable or not. If the total resources exceed the four-year net price, it's affordable. But the ideal would be the total resources, not including the loans, exceeds the net price, in which case you might not have to borrow. But if your total resources fall short of the cost of that college is going to require you to borrow an unreasonable amount of debt. So that's the first kind of benchmarking I would do. Look at all your colleges that way, and maybe steer your child away from the colleges that are unaffordable. Have them visit on a rainy day instead of a sunny day. Check the cafeteria menu to see if their favorite food is being served on the day you're planning on visit. And if it's a college that's cheaper, send them that day. If it's a college is unaffordable, don't visit on that day. And subtle things that you can do to influence your child's choice. And plus, and explain this. You don't have to tell your children how much you earn or how much your net worth is. You can just tell them how much money is going to be available to pay for the college for all 4 years and let them do the math. And they will make a reasonable decision. They will realize that they really can't afford to go to a college where they're going to come out with $50,000, $75,000, $100,000 in debt. The other thing is you start saving for college as soon as possible, even if you haven't yet, or you increase the amount you're saving. Child should start searching for scholarships and applying for them. And there are many scholarships you can win in younger grades, not just as a high school senior. So every dollar you win, every dollar you save is a dollar less you're going to have to borrow. That gives you the flexibility to either graduate with less debt or to choose a more expensive college than you otherwise could have afforded. And when it comes time to look at student loans and financial aid award letters, be sure you understand exactly what the total costs are, what the gift aid, the grants and scholarships, the money that you don't have to repay are, and therefore what that difference, the net price is. Forget about loans for that at that point. The net price is the discounted sticker price. It's the amount of money you're going to have to pay either from savings, annual contributions from income, and the American Opportunity Tax Credit and other tax benefits, and loans. The higher that net price, the more debt you're taking on. So have a very clear picture of how much debt going to this college is going to entail and what that's going to mean for your lifestyle after graduation. And your goal should be to live like a student while you're in school so you don't have to live like a student after you graduate.
Boy, sound advice, Mark. Well, listen, as we close, if our listeners, whether they're parents or students, would like to find out more information and take advantage of the laws that are out there and, believe it or not, the money that is available that most parents don't realize that they can get, how can they do so? Tell them about your website.
Right. So our website is savingforcollege.com. Originally, the key focus was on 529 plans. And it is the most popular guide to saving for college. But we've expanded the content to include all aspects of saving and paying for college, including the FAFSA, student loans, scholarships, tax benefits like the American Opportunity Tax Credit. You can find all that information on the website. It's got over 1,000 pages of articles on every topic. And if you do a Google search, chances are, you're going to find that website at the top of the search results, especially for anything dealing with saving for college.
All right. Well, listen, Mark, we appreciate you coming on the program. Great information for either a parent or a student listening. We hope you found this interview valuable because it's only a couple more months and college starts up again. Mark, thanks so much for being on the program.
Thank you for having me.
You bet. Bye-bye. Once again, if you are a parent or a student, as Mark was talking about there, there is so much money out there that parents aren't taking advantage of. And some really sound advice. Go read some of the articles on his site. I think you're going to find it helpful, whether you're a graduating student or soon to be a graduating student. Maybe you're a junior in high school or you're a parent dealing with issues of, you know, how am I going to get two or three kids through school and pay for all this? Because one of the biggest issues we're dealing with as a society today is the cost of education and the amount of student loans. I think last time I checked, it was like $1.6 trillion that is owed out there. And imagine starting out in life where the average student has $30,000 of debt. You meet your future wife. She's got $30,000 of debt. You start out your marriage with $60,000 in debt. That's before car payments. Don't even think about coming up with a down payment for a car. A lot of great information out there. It's out there. Please use it. It could save you a lot of money. I'm Jim Poplava. Thanks for listening.
The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Please be advised that you invest at your own risk.